Hello, I'm Barry Fishley, a partner at Weil in London, and this is the first of a series of podcasts in the areas of technology, intellectual property and data privacy. And this podcast focuses on the General Data Protection Regulation, or the GDPR, which will be effective from the 25th of May of this year. And the idea of this podcast is to specifically identify the steps that should be taken by organisations who are now just thinking about compliance with the GDPR. I will be discussing the issues with members of my team, namely Muz Shah and Bryony Pollard, and Julia will be asking the questions.
Why does any organisation need to care about the GDPR?
Well, because the GDPR would apply to all organisations which hold, use, process, disclose personal data. The GDPR will supersede the current legislation, so in the UK that's the Data Protection Act of 1998, and the underlying directive. And therefore it covers all organisations which process personal data, and personal data is data which relates to living individuals, so it would cover employee data, customer data, supplier and intermediary data. So that's the first point. The second point is that the GDPR would apply to organisations that have no European presence. It would apply in one of two scenarios, either where the organisation offers goods or services to EU citizens. So, for example, you can have an American company which has a French language website, or it could be a Asian-based company which monitors the online behavior of European citizens by way of using certain types of technologies such as cookie technology. So in either scenario, the GDPR would apply to those organizations even though they have no European presence. The third big takeaway and the reason why organizations should care about the GDPR is that the stakes are much higher for serious breach. At the moment, the UK has a regime whereby for serious breaches, the maximum fine is £500,000. Going forward under the GDPR, the maximum fine for serious breaches will be the greater of €20 million or 4% of worldwide revenue. So the stakes are much higher. And for those reasons, I think there's a lot more focus on GDPR compliance.
For those organisations that are way behind in terms of implementation, what should they concentrate on?
Well, there are 99 articles in the GDPR. Whilst it would be misleading to state that some articles are more important than others, there is differential regulatory exposure under different articles. Accordingly, organisations that are yet to commence an implementation programme should consider focusing primarily on the articles and areas of the GDPR which present the greatest enforcement risk or risk to individual rights and data security. Such areas would include information security systems and benchmarking of security measures against alternative technological security solutions, mandatory updates to privacy policies or fair processing information, including the provision of information about the legitimate interests processing condition and the periods for which personal data is retained, amendments to contracts with data processors to introduce new clauses required by the GDPR, a review of consent gathering mechanisms to assess whether existing consents are GDPR compliant, the introduction of governance measures to ensure that appropriate recording of data processing operations can be undertaken and that data breaches can be reported within the new default deadline of 72 hours, and a review of systems to ensure that the organisation can comply with the new data subject rights, including a request for personal data erasure, also known as the right to be forgotten.
Okay, so we recognise the areas of concern, but what should we do next?
My top three action items in terms of what to do next would be, firstly, assemble a team of key data protection stakeholders. So this group should include individuals from IT, legal, somebody from your communications or marketing department, and then somebody from operations. Secondly, identify your data flows. So the key stakeholders I referred to should get very comfortable and familiar with how their organisation handles data and how data moves around the business, particularly data flows in and out of the business. Now, a way of addressing that would be to conduct audits of those data flows, and they could be conducted internally or by external providers. And the ICO and legal advisors and providers have put together various checklists and questionnaires which are useful for businesses when conducting their audits. And then thirdly, collate your existing privacy policies, fair processing notices, and contracts with third-party service providers which process personal data for your organisation, as well as any internal data processing agreements which you might have in place. This process will allow an organisation to assess the volume of documentary changes, which is likely to prove one of the more time-consuming aspects of GDPR preparation.
Do we have to go back and sort out our consents?
Well, it depends. The standard for valid consent is more stringent under the GDPR and requires an affirmative action from the data subject, signifying unambiguous consent. In addition, data processing which is being consented to needs to be described alongside the relevant consent gathering mechanism, such as a tick box. The ICO has said that if your consent already meets the GDPR standards, there is no need to obtain fresh consents. However, if your existing consents do not meet GDPR standards, these will technically become invalid from the 25th of May 2018 and cannot be safely relied on. Although each consent gathering mechanism will need to be reviewed individually, there are some useful rules of thumb. So implied consents are unlikely to be GDPR compliant, and consents which are bundled together in a single statement or buried within a privacy policy or consumer agreement will not meet the standards of the GDPR.
What should we do about our contracts with suppliers?
So the contracts that need to be focused on are those contracts where suppliers either hold or have access to or store personal data. So it could be contracts with third-party payroll providers, companies which have access to or provide IT hosting or related services or other IT technology type services. So look at those contracts, because those contracts need to comply with the additional obligations under the GDPR. And there is no grace period for compliance in relation to this particular article under the GDPR. So I would suggest focusing on the most critical relationships first, and they may be critical because of the special types of data being held or stored or used, so for example, HR data or certain types of customer data, and obviously look at and focus on and prioritise value contracts with third-party suppliers. The GDPR says that there must be a written contract with those organisations which host or have access to or use personal data on behalf of their customer. And the contracts must include the following additional clauses. So this is the checklist that one should use. First, the instructions to the supplier, known as the processor, in relation to the use of the personal data ought to be documented. Second, there ought to be a stipulation in the contract that the supplier has passed on and imposed confidentiality obligations on its employees or other staff that have access to the personal data. Further, that the supplier has implemented appropriate technical and organisational measures to guard against and deal with security of the data, that the supplier will assist the customer, the controller, when the controller has to respond to requests by the individual to exercise certain rights that they have. For example, it could be data subject access rights or the right to be forgotten, which Brian will talk about later. Further, the supplier must, at the controller's choice, either destroy or return the data at the end of the processing activities, and make available to the controller information to demonstrate they have complied with the obligations that I've outlined. I also think it's good practice for the contract to include a clause obliging the processor, the supplier, to flow down these obligations on any sub-processor, i.e. any other organisation which it appoints with the customer's consent to undertake any processing activities. So those key issues and key clauses which should be included within those contracts.
What about this right to be forgotten, and what are the implications for my organisation?
The so-called right to be forgotten is probably one of the, if not the most controversial addition to data subjects' rights made by the GDPR. However, there are limited circumstances in which such right exists, and these are where the data is no longer needed for the original purpose, the data subject has withdrawn his or her consent, and there are no other grounds for processing of the data, for example, to carry out a contract, the data subject has objected to the processing of his or her data and no overriding legitimate grounds to process exist. A legal obligation requires the erasure of the data. The processing of the data is unlawful, or the data has been collected in relation to the offering of information society services to a child. So a common example of where a data subject may request that their personal data be erased may be where an adult individual has given his consent to be sent marketing materials, but where no transaction has taken place between the company and the individual. In that scenario, if the individual requests his personal data to be erased, it is unlikely that the data controller could justify holding on to that data and continuing to process it. Now, data controllers are not only obliged to erase the data, they must go further. So where a data controller has made a data subject's personal data publicly available, it must take reasonable steps to inform any third-party controllers who may be processing the data that the data subject has made a request for erasure, unless it is impossible or involves a disproportionate effort to do so. So I said that such steps must be reasonable, and that means they must take into account the available technology and the cost of implementation. It is worth noting, however, that organisations can refuse to comply with erasure requests in certain limited circumstances. So, for example, public health purposes in the public interest and the establishment defence or exercise of a legal claim. Of course, there is a practical problem in relation to the exercise of the right to be forgotten. When it comes to deleting data, how far back does the data controller need to go? Does it mean deletion of all data from all systems? The ICO Article 29 Working Party guidance suggests that the answer is yes. But does that also include removal from suppression lists? One compliance solution may be to use an anonymised suppression list against which data collected or otherwise obtained by the organisation can be screened. And where there are matches against the suppression list, such entries can automatically be deleted so as to ensure that no further processing takes place of the relevant personal data. Because this solution should be considered in light of any official ICO guidance which is issued on this point. So to ensure that your organisation can deal with any requests for erasure of data, you should be assessing whether your organisation needs to put in place new or updated processes and procedures to deal with the practical implications of the extended right. So, for example, a specific data procedure for dealing with access and erasure requests. The right to erasure is likely to require significant changes to companies' operational processes and IT systems to ensure that data subjects can exercise their rights effectively. And it's certainly worth considering when licensing new systems, and your procurement teams should be aware of the requirements so that they can ensure that any new systems that they procure for the business have the necessary functionality.
Do you think that most organisations are up to speed, and what is your sense as to the level of preparedness?
So my sense is that it depends on the sector. So, for example, the major banks, the insurance companies and other financial services businesses, I suspect, are a long way down the path of in terms of compliance. I think they've spent significant amounts of time and resources and putting teams together to tackle and understand the issues and implement solutions. I think other organisations, for example, in different sectors, for example, retailers are still grappling with the issues. I think the right to be forgotten is one of the key issues that organisations are grappling with, alongside perhaps consent and consent issues. So I think the majority of organisations are still better understanding the issues and looking for practical solutions.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, thanks very much, Julia, for your questions, and thank you for listening. I hope you can join us soon for our next podcast. Thank you. Bye-bye.